Hi, I'm Liz Taylor, MD of the Liz Taylor Consultancy, and I have a great guest sharing the events that made them this episode. As you know, in this season of The Events That Made Me, we're focusing on arts and culture. And whilst you will hear the introduction to my guest in a minute, what you need to know is that he is one of the cogs behind the wheel of the international entertainment scene. It is Professor Jonathan Shallett. Today's guest on my podcast is a bit of a coup. He is widely recognised as one of the best connected and most influential figures in the entertainment business. And today we're going to find out why. Awarded the OBE in 2014 for services to the industry, he also boasts an honorary professorship at Henley Business School, an honorary doctorate at Reading University, and he lectures at the University of Southern California. Very private individual, I was delighted that he accepted my invitation to share his journey. So please welcome Chairman, Professor Jonathan Shallett, OBE.
It's lovely to speak to you, Liz, and thank you. I would begin by saying, and I appreciate and warmly embrace your wonderful accolades, but I think that many people might not say I'm private. I think much of my success has happened because I'm not private. I'm private in the sense that what people tell me is confidential, and I keep confidences exactly that. But I'm definitely very public in advocating what's best for my clients and those I work with.
Well, forgive the pun, but that's music to my ears, because for the next half hour, we're going to find out about the not-so-private Professor Jonathan Shallett, OBE. So great. Now, if I'm correct, you had a privileged upbringing and education. And I know that this can sometimes be challenging because expectations are high. When and how do you end up this tour de force in an industry which then was probably considered totally unsuitable for a nice Jewish boy?
I'm going to begin by saying I'm not sure I agree with the word privileged in the way it might be interpreted. Yes, I was fortunate that I had loving, caring parents who wanted to achieve the best for my sister and I. But the truth is, they were second generation Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe. So life was not entirely easy for them. You know, you see anti-Semitism now from time to time. And when in the 60s and 50s, it was far more rife. Yes, my parents had made some money working hard, so we always had food on our table and we enjoyed some of the better things of life. But to use the word privilege would be slightly misleading as to how that helped me achieve what I've achieved today.
What, Jonathan, led you down the music trail?
I think it's more, I mean, I've always loved music, like many people have. You know, music moved me from a very early age. I was fortunate enough when I was young to have a grandmother who loved theatre, and she took me to the theatre often, both to see plays and also concerts when the concerts came to our local theatre in Sussex. And it was through seeing live events that made me fall in love with the impact of music. I think my love of anything live, and this ranges from any form of performance, comes from the positive impact it makes on people who enjoy the live experience.
It's interesting because as we continue to chat, I mean, you've been involved in all sorts of things, not just music, in film production, lots of different things along the way. And as with all my guests, I ask for three things that they consider are events that made them during their career. And the first one that you sent to me, it really excited me, was that in 1993, when I think you were 31 years of age, you met George Martin. Now, for the listener, he was a record producer that was always referred to as the fifth Beatle. And I think it was with him that you had your first international commercial success. So tell us what happened. Why was that such a huge influence on you?
I think anybody that Sir George Martin met will say they influenced him incredibly. Most notable, Paul McCartney. If you ever speak to Paul McCartney, the one person who Paul McCartney will completely revere is Sir George Martin, as would John Lennon, as would Ringo Starr, as would anybody connected with the Beatles. Sir George Martin, or I guess George, when I met him, and indeed when Paul met him, was just an incredibly warm, inspiring, giving human being. I think the strength of George was to bring so much to the party, to the project, the equation, but take so little. In fact, of course, he took an incredible amount because, as you say, he was the fifth Beatle. But in giving so much unconditionally, it allowed who he was with to grow and prosper and flower and become the very best version of themselves. If people think about the Beatles now and what an incredible group they were, of course they're an incredible group. They're the greatest group ever. However, they weren't so great when they met George Martin. They'd been rejected by virtually everybody, as had Cilla Black, by the way, who he also discovered made her a big recording star. And what George Martin did as an employee of EMI Records in those days, he understood the potential of the four young men brought to him, but he made that potential come alive. And I think the same for my career. You know, I had a career. I was doing really well. I can't say I wasn't doing well by the time I was 33, but I hadn't had global international successes. And George Martin empowered me to have that. He embraced what I proposed. He embraced my vision, and he enabled my vision to have a global platform.
And how did he do that, Jonathan?
He basically opened up his world to me, and he allowed me to use his name. It's interesting. You talk about me being music, and absolutely music is my first love, but I work across television, film, theatre. You know, when it comes to the British entertainment industry, I embrace all parts of it. But George Martin was someone who also bet on me. And it's interesting now, because when I do contracts with people, often before they even work with you, they want the T's crossed and the I's dotted. Even for, like, I don't know, the other day, a guy wouldn't work for me unless I paid him £1,000 up front, because that's how he operated. I incurred a debt to George Martin of over £200,000 without a contract. That's the kind of man George Martin was. He decided he trusted me. He started making my record. He gave me access to his amazing recording studio in North London called Air Studios, and his time and the orchestra costs. If I had run away and not paid that bill, he would have lost £200,000. Obviously, I paid that and a lot more. But that was, again, the opportunity a man like that gave me, because I could never have afforded that kind of outlay in the beginning to get the project going. I needed someone to give me some space, someone to give me the opportunity, to get someone to give me the trust. And once the greater global record industry saw that George Martin was part of Team Shalit, the record industry opened up to me, and the global record industry then took me seriously. So I was able to approach people like Cher, Elton John, Bon Jovi, Sting, Carly Simon, Lisa Stansfield, all who were involved in the recording we did.
Do you want to swap black books, Jonathan? I'll give you mine if you give me yours.
I'm always very happy to share a dress. But Liz, let's be honest, Liz, I might be the best connected person in London, but you're the best connected person in Manchester.
Thank you very much. Has that affected how you have supported people, mentored people, run your business? Because that is what he did for you, was invaluable. And you are a tough cookie. You don't take, you know, you take no prisoners. I've been on the wrong side of Jonathan Shalit.
I'm a tough cookie, yes, and I take no prisoners, yes. But that's because I set myself and those I work with very high standards. Some people can't hack that. They fall away. They leave. And they're not necessarily wrong to leave, because everybody has to choose their own personal journey and how they want to do that. What I can say, though, in terms of my toughness and my strength, is everybody I've ever owed money to, I've paid. There's not one person out there who can claim Jonathan Shalit ever screwed them, ever crooked them, or ever didn't do right by them. Those that might claim that can never back it up, because it's simply not true. I also think the challenge you have in my business is that however you conduct yourself, whatever you do, whatever intentions you have, some people will love you and some people will hate you. The more successful you are, the more demanding you are, the more lovers you get, but the more haters you get. So for every person you find who talks positively, you'll find someone who talks negatively of me. And the interesting thing is that many people whose lives have been empowered, made better, and achieved more after they've worked for me, whether they're still with me or they've left or moved on, there are very few people who have been more successful after they've left me. That's not to say they haven't grown, because I can think of some fantastic examples of people who have gone on to run companies or have important positions in companies, and some talent that has continued to shine because I back people. And it's inevitable that some people you back, after a period of time, you'll grow apart from and will choose to leave you. It's sad, yes, but equally, it's also rewarding to me to see them continue to succeed when they do. And it's also rewarding to me when I see staff who have left me continue to succeed in their new companies or even with their own companies. So all round, I embrace success and positivity. And yes, I did get that from George Martin. Hi, I'm Jonathan Shallett, and you're listening to Events That Made Me with Liz Taylor.
Who has been your single biggest achievement?
My single biggest achievement has been my family. I never identify an individual who's been my single biggest achievement, because that would indicate that there are others I'm not so proud of. That indicates, you know, a priority of mindset and also favoritism. And it's like, which of my daughters am I proudest of? I'm proud of them equally, and I love them equally.
There must be somebody that maybe came to you that was more of, I don't mean in sort of stardom, but there must have been somebody that you perhaps doubted at the beginning and that came out shining.
There's an employee I can talk about, an ex-employee who sadly died now. He was a young guy. He was a black guy adopted by a white vicar. He had a whole journey of personal challenges that made his attitude to the world interesting, is possibly the way to say it. He came to work with me. It doesn't really matter how he came to work with me. He did. And early on, he was dishonest, and he took a backhander to place a client in a certain job they got. I later found out. And I remember I found out he had £1,000 backhander to do that, because I couldn't understand why the client was doing that particular opportunity, even though the client was happy to do it. It didn't make any sense to me. Anyway, I got this guy and I said, JD, this is like out of order what you've done. You've taken a private deal for yourself to put one of our clients forward. Obviously, he was not happy. He was scared. He thought I was going to fire him. And I took the view that, yes, he had fucked up and made a mistake and been dishonest to me to a certain extent. But was I going to destroy his career because of that? He was a young man. He'd already come on an incredibly long journey, and even getting to work for him was an achievement. So I told him it could never happen again. He sincerely promised me it would never happen again. And the outcome of that journey was we discovered a rap group that went on to win 6 MOBO Awards, went on to star in a Hollywood movie, Scooby-Doo, went to Los Angeles, toured America. And then indeed, JD, when he was traveling with this group, met the then president of Sony Australia and was offered a job as president of A&R at Sony Australia, who is the person responsible for signing the artists. He then went on to be a big star in Australia, being a judge on Australian Idol when it was at a massive peak. And then sadly, he got ill and died. But that was an incredible journey. And if I hadn't given him the opportunity of coming to work for me, and then in turn hadn't forgiven him and given it some bandwidth when he committed a misdemeanor, he might never have had that career.
And that, Jonathan, is why you own the industry. We have a second event here that made you, which was the Oscars in 2010. What? Tell me about this, because I can't believe, and I don't mean this with any disrespect, but I can't believe that you were overimpressed by the Oscars. What was it?
I wasn't overimpressed by the Oscars, but I kind of look back at amusement at that particular year, or that particular 10 days, because it was 10 days that was incredible, but also it was 10 days that changed my life. The reason it was 10 days that changed my life is my then wife, Katrina, who I wasn't dating at the time, came to LA with me at that point. And the reason for that is when I was single and I reached my 40s, I always used to take a female companion traveling with me because I worked out it would be easy to have a companion because that companion could party by day and chill and relax and by night be my date to go places. And it was easier for a guy to have an age-appropriate female with him who was a great ambassador for him. And Katrina was a dear friend. I was very close to her family. She really wanted to come on a trip with me. She was a widow, but we were great friends. So I said, come to LA and enjoy, I guess, Oscar week. She came, but what happened in that week was I fell in love with her and we got engaged 10 days later. So, and now she's my wife. So that was obviously that week. But that week I was kind of literally multitasking and juggling. I had Kelly Brook in Los Angeles at that point. Kelly was filming a big TV series for NBC television. Mylene Klass was presenting the Oscars for CNN television. My new group, N-Dubs, were about to sign to Universal Records in Los Angeles. And there was one particular dinner when I had three dinners going at one go. And I went to this restaurant, and on one table I was dining with Mylene Klass and John Ferreter, a legendary Hollywood agent who sadly now passed. On another table I had Kelly Brook, and another table I had N-Dubs. And I was literally going from table to table conducting the business meetings over dinner.
That's amazing. I mean, I can't compete with that. My only story that I can compare to is when Newcastle United played Manchester United in the FA Cup final party, and I got both gigs. I had a car and I was going, and Sting was at the Newcastle United one, and then I was back at MU. So yeah, it's juggling all balls, but my names were not as impressive as those names.
My wife reminds me that, so when she gets to LA and Oscar week, I mentioned to her, I'm going to the Elton John's Oscar viewing party, which is absolutely fine. The only problem was I said to her, but you're not coming, I'm going with Kelly Brook. And on the basis, I decided I was going to marry her. It wasn't the best signal to her that Kelly Brook was my preference. The truth of the matter is, Kelly Brook wasn't my preference on a personal level. And Kelly is a very valued friend and client for many years and still is. And obviously she was making a TV series in America, and the Elton John Oscar viewing party is a hugely important event. And so it was appropriate I went with Kelly. But I will tell you a funny anecdote. So we're at this amazing Elton John Oscar preview party, which was fantastic, with the great and the good of Hollywood there, as you can imagine. And I'm guessing the food was the cool food of the moment, nouveau cuisine, call it what you like. But there was only one problem with the food. It didn't fill you up. So after eating this delicious meal, there wasn't enough of it, so you remain hungry. So Kelly and I ordered pizza takeout, and they brought the pizza takeout to the venue we were at, and we smuggled the pizza takeout onto our table and enjoyed the takeaway.
You see, you can take the boy out of London, but you can't take London out of the boy. I mean, that's gorgeous. You
know, when I think of people that changed my life, so Elton John in many ways is one of them, because when I reached out to him on the George Martin album, he immediately responded, and he responded himself. And indeed, I had a dinner party to celebrate the album and to invite George Martin and his amazing musician, Larry Adler, my guest list for dinner that night. And remember, this is a modest West Kensington apartment. But my dinner list that night was Elton John and his now husband, David Furnish, Sting and Trudy Styler, Lisa Stansfield, Cher, Sir George and Lady Martin, Larry Adler, and a few other people. And Elton John arrived early. And I found out that the day before, his driver had driven to my flat to make sure Elton would arrive on time and not late. Elton came, spent 2 hours there, spoke to everybody in the room and made them feel special, and before leaving in the most gracious of ways. And when he came to the recording studio to record the Gershwin song I did with Sir George Martin, again, Elton arrived early. When you record an orchestra, you pay for the whole session, whether you use the orchestra or not. So if you waste any time, it can cost you money. And a lot of musicians didn't understand that. And they arrived under rehearsed, not knowing the song properly, which meant the first 20 minutes, half an hour of the 3-hour session was spent getting the musician ready to sing their song properly. Elton John again rang up George Martin himself a few weeks before the session, asked George would he come over to his house to go through the song with him, because Elton John understood how recording sessions are done. He arrived early on the day and was ready to start bang on the dot of the correct start time and every minute of the session he used. That's what I call professionalism. That's just sheer class. And that's why Elton John is one of the greatest musicians ever, because his level of professionalism and applying himself to what he's doing is second to none.
You met Alex Siegel and Alistair Goldsmith, one who was, I think, was Alex an American TV producer, have I got that right?
I essentially have two companies I work across, one being InterTalent and one being Chosen. InterTalent is an all-embracing entertainment company, and Alex Siegel is one of the most exciting young agents I've ever met, and I made him managing director earlier this year. So Alex Siegel is now the managing director of my entertainment company that embraces TV representation, some music, acting, broadcasting of all kinds, and IP and social media.
And where did you meet Alex?
I met Alex 8 years ago when he applied for a job at my company, and then my then managing director hired him.
And so Raw Global is now InterTalent, is that correct?
Yes. So we started off called Shalit Global. Yes. We came Raw Global in 2010, and then 2018 became InterTalent. And the reason for those name changes were very simple. I decided I wanted the company to be bigger than me. Simple as that. And that's my advice to any young entrepreneur. Don't make it about you. There is no I in team. And when the company had my name above the door, it was totally about me. And therefore, anybody that dealt with the company dealt with my personality. And the challenge when you have a personality that's strong is it's like Marmite, some love and some hate. And so you limit yourself in the breadth of your business. But by changing the name to RAW, which stood for Rights, Ownership, Artist Representation, which is the core description of our business, it enabled the company to be bigger than me and allow the key employees and my co-directors to build their own client base and infrastructure. Unfortunately, there was a company in America called RAW that had registered the name before we did. And when we started becoming successful and spreading internationally, like that trip to Hollywood I just told you, it began to piss off the American RAW, who then took action against me in the California court, saying I couldn't trade in America under the name of RAW. My lawyer advised me, whether I won or lost, it was going to cost me over $250,000 in legal fees, which I'd never get back, plus the time I have to spend in America, the negative energy. So my American lawyer's advice to me was, change your name, hence InterTalent.
Interesting, because I'm very, very brand focused, and the whole podcast series that I've been doing hooks on brand. By changing your brand name, it's been a positive, not a negative decision. And yet often changing brand names is challenging.
Changing a brand name is challenging, because when you have a brand already and you think of a new name, the new name you come up with is never as good as the name you've got. And you go through names after name, and you come up with a name, you think it's brilliant, you wake up the next morning, then you don't think it's brilliant, you tell your name to someone, they don't like it. So to actually end up with a brand which gets a consensus of support is hugely difficult. I just wanted to mention Alistair Goldsmith. So alongside InterTalent, I have a company called Chosen Music. I have a company called Chosen Music. It's actually Alistair Goldsmith's company. We are partners. But I'd met Alistair some years ago through his amazing wife, Luciana Berger, the incredible ex-MP in Liverpool, who suffered the vilest anti-Semitism ever imaginable. I mean, Luciana would be one of the people I most admire in this world. And then, of course, when she met her incredible husband, Alistair, he naturally became my friend, because anyone that married Luciana was an incredible human being, and Alistair was just that. And he was an independent music manager and actually a bit of a branding expert in Liverpool, where he was from. And we became friends and talked over the years. And then one day he said, let's work together. And we started putting some thoughts together. And essentially I backed him as a silent partner-ish, because it's not silent, because I'm here to support, you know, empower and help him grow Chosen as big as we possibly can. But he's building this incredible brand called Chosen Music. And again, a brand. He didn't suggest calling it Goldsmith Music. He wanted to choose a name that was exactly that, a name that could build and build and build. And you know, he scored, for example, this year, the biggest record deal in the world for a British artist. He signed to Atlantic Records in New York. He's had 5 billion streams. He makes incredible records for Disney with people like Zayn Malik. You know, he's a real person on the verge of being a global powerhouse in the music industry.
You sniff them out, don't you, Jonathan?
Thank you for saying I sniff them out, Liz, but I also get it wrong sometimes. You know, over the years, there've been some people who I've had the most amazing journey with, and frankly, some people have shafted me and decided to do their own thing and then tried to manipulate things behind my back to get me out of the equation.
But what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I think that none of us would be successful if we didn't fail. But I think it's a skill to be able to actually recognize the potential in somebody, because, you know, you're taking big steps here with these people.
An event that changed my life. Interesting. I just thought as I talked to you about this, Liz, but it's interesting. Last year, I had a massive restructure in my company and I had some internal challenges to deal with. The internal challenges meant that I had to write off £500,000. I had to part company with some brilliant employees. And some people, in fact, rumour around my industry to a lot of people was I was down and out and Jonathan Shallet had gone bust. That's a simple fact. August 2019 was my horrible year. And the reality was, what most people didn't realise is they gloated with the fact that, as you kindly put it, Professor Jonathan Shallet OB, he may have gone bust and been killed off. What a lot of those people who didn't realise was that I'd actually been trading for 28 years. And in a business, what, in England, according to McKinsey, the world leading management consultancy, the average life of a limited company is 18 years. Next year, I'd have been trading 30 years. So in essence, I've nearly doubled that. But last year, I had some serious financial problems. I had the choice of liquidating one of my companies. I chose not to. I chose to write the debt off myself, honor every penny we owed from that company, which cost me considerably. But I took the view that if, as you kindly pointed out, I've reached a position whereby I'm respected in the industry and I've achieved a great deal, if I then go and run away from my responsibilities and don't pay my debts and don't honour the monies I owe people, even if it's legal, it would morally be wrong and I'd be morally corrupt. So I went ahead and I did the right thing by people. And it's interesting, as you're Jewish, Liz, two people actually gave me some great advice at the time who I've never publicly thanked. So your podcast I'm going to use to thank. One's being Richard Desmond, who, as you know, owned OK, the Express, Channel 5, chairman, Northern and Shell. He himself is a Marmite character. Some love him, some hate him. But when it came to the moment when I needed friends and advice, Richard took the time to give it. And someone else who's globally famous is called Simon Cowell. Simon could see I had challenges. The advice he gave me, like the advice Richard gave me, is deeply confidential. But Simon took time to call me up, took time to change his schedule, and gave me some very clear and priceless advice. And I would say the advice from both of them helped me shape my future. And now come the beginning of 2021, I'm in a far stronger position than I was at the time of my crisis in 2018. And that was partly due to the strength and support and advice of Richard Desmond and Simon Cowell. I'd also say, and again, I'm not going to mention clients by name, but there were a few clients who really stood by me and came to the forefront in their loyalty and respect for me and go, do you know what? We're going to stand by Jonathan. There were some clients who ran for the hills, who couldn't get away from me quick enough and tried to let people think I couldn't honor my debts and took their earnings away from me and refused to pay me and spread rumors that I couldn't honor my debts and did terrible things in the sense of telling people we dealt with pay us direct because Jonathan Shallet can't afford to pay us and we're worried. Nothing could be further from the truth. There was not one point when anyone's money was not paid in full. But the interesting thing was, for me, normally I deal with shitstorms around people and I crisis manage for other people and I sort out their problems. For a brief moment, I was in the eye of the storm and I came through it, but it actually taught me how to deal with it even more. And now, as I say, I've got this incredible company. I've got 18 amazing people who work with me. The company and the employees who work here have never been stronger. I'm going to add one more name to that. Thank you. An incredible guy called Alan Edwards, who in his time has done the PR for the Spice Girls, David Bowie, Paul McCartney. He was another guy that stood up and gave me incredible advice, and which was very valuable. And I don't know why I tell you that anecdote, Liz, but I think it shows you how and why you shape a business.
I've always said to my two girls who I brought up, you can't buy breeding. And that's instilled with you from a very, very early age. And I think that's reflected in how you have run the business. So for the ones that ran away, they're not worth the Jonathan Shallit support. I think what's important is that throughout all this journey of 30 years, you have gained respect, you've been honest, you've been loyal, you've been humble, you've got amazing friends, you own an industry. But I think the reason that you have the support of Cowell and Richard Desmond, who I know, is for the reasons that I've just said, the honesty, the loyalty, the respect, that says it all. That says it all in an industry that is so cutthroat.
I think anyone who comes massive successful is not universally liked. And I think it's very difficult to be universally liked. And I think that the higher you rise, the more people want to shoot you down, particularly in my industry, because everyone wants everyone's bit of cake. But, you know, we've talked about music. You know, we're a very key part of the British television industry, the British film industry, the British acting industry. And again, that's, I use the word we or no, not I. And I've got an amazing agent here called Oliver Thompson, who's one of the best acting agents I've ever met. I've had the pleasure of working with Oliver Thompson for 10 years. His clients have literally starred on Broadway, have starred in Hollywood, and won Olivier Awards and BAFTAs in London. You know, and I look at breakfast television in the morning and I see with massive pride people like Lorraine Kelly and Susanna Reid. And I mention them in particular, not because I favour them, because I don't, but through the whole COVID pandemic, they were there every day. You know, they never once missed a television show. And even when Susanna had suspected COVID, she worked every day from home. And these people, there's a reason why these people are so universally admired and so successful, is because they're absolute professionals at what they do in the most incredible way. And I look back on the people that left me. The truth is, I am very sad at some of the people that left me, but both staff, friends and clients, because our journey didn't have to be over. And I'm not going to for a moment blame other people. So I think one of the things about making mistakes in life when things go wrong, it's really important to take personal responsibility. So the bump in the road I had in 2018, I will immediately say I probably caused some of those problems in terms of not identifying some of the problems up front. And it took my then managing director, a great man called Grant Michaels, to then point out some honest truths to me. And he pointed out to me that particular company, my business, I say that particular company because I have a number of businesses that are overall profitable, but that particular company was losing me £20,000 a month. The reason it was losing me £20,000 a month is very simple. More money was going out than was coming in. That's business. And anyone, you know, people always talk about business in the most complicated way. But the truth is, people, business is not complicated. You've got to earn more money than you spend or you go bust. And you can dress it up and use every complicated financial word and phraseology that you use. If you don't give a service or a product the public want or the business community want, they won't buy it.
Have we got anybody up and coming that you can share with us that is going to burst onto the scene, whether it be television, music?
I'm not going to talk up and coming because in terms of coolness and hitting an industry in the right way, if I mention a young person by name, I actually tempt fate because it looks like the manipulation of someone's career by a great puppeteer. Because the truth is I can help young people's careers explode. But the secret is not to let the whole world know I'm behind the scenes, because if people know I'm behind the scenes, that then takes away some of the appeal of that individual. But I can talk to you about some incredible things that are going to happen. Some of you may remember a legend called Trisha Goddard, who used to have a daily show on ITV called The Trisha Show. She's going to make a massive comeback on British television next year. I have an incredible, I have many incredible clients, but, you know, and I don't, again, I know Lorraine Kelly, who obviously has a daily show on ITV, is presenting a very sad program because it remembers 25 years of the Dunblane massacre. And that'd be primetime ITV1 in March, which is when the 25th anniversary of that terrible tragedy was. I have some amazing young actors who are just filming some drama for the BBC. And in fact, there's a great girl called Molly Rainford who was on Britain's Got Talent when she was 11. She's now 19 years of age, and the BBC are making a Hannah Montana type series. And she's a star of that. We'll see if that makes her a superstar. I think it could. I have some amazing talent coming through, whether it be in sport, whether it be in social media, whether it be in television or film. So in answer to your question, Liz, the InterTalent platform is going to see many people fly next year who are associated with our company.
And I think, Jonathan, that includes you, because I don't think you're going anywhere sometime soon.
You know, I just, you know, I'd like to do a quick roll call of people who've affected my life and changed it for the better. There's an incredible lady called Kanya King, CBE. Kanya King, founder of the MOBO Awards. MOBO stands for Music of Black Origin, and I'm chairman of the charity, the MOBO Trust charity, in support of the incredible work Kanya does. You know, people now talk about Me Too, Black Lives Matters, racism and diversity. Long before we reached this subject, Kanya King was challenging all these things that are wrong in our society. She was challenging the British music industry, when even though Black people were as important part of the music industry as white people, it was dominated by white people, hence why Kanya started the MOBO Awards. But she tells me a great anecdote that when she first started it, she was on the phone to someone, and they put their hand over the mouthpiece to get the attention of the person you wanted to speak to. This is long before computers. And she heard the words, "I've got this black radicalist on the phone for you." I mean, to think that 20 years ago, someone championing the cause of diversity was called a black radicalist. It's incredible. I mean, it's deeply embarrassing for the United Kingdom that white people thought like that. But Kanya King got over that, and she made her awards globally successful that were broadcast on BBC One and YouTube only in November of last year. Once again, a triumph. So that is someone who I admire greatly. In truth, I admire greatly Simon Cowell. Why do I admire Simon Cowell? Quite simply, he is the most successful British film television producer in the world. Fact. He's in the Guinness Book of Records for the most number of countries broadcasting his Got Talent brand. There's no British television producer in the world that has achieved what Simon Cowell has. But it's quite simple how he does it. It's not complicated. He works harder and he works longer hours than his competitors. Many people I call up at 6:01, they've gone home. Many people I call at 9:59 a.m., they're not in the office. Simon Cowell calls people all day, all night, all days, every day of the week. He edits his programs at 4 in the morning. If he's not happy, he goes back and does it again. That's how you come the best of what you do. You don't come the best of what you do by being brainy. Absolutely, there's some very brainy people who have been incredible. You come the best of what you do by working harder than your competitors. It's not rocket science. Work harder than your competitors, and over the journey, you'll do better. And I say that to anybody listening to this podcast who's struggling in their career. Work harder, think broader, and your career success will increase.
I think it's passion and commitment.
Absolutely. I would say passion and commitment wholeheartedly. But that's also about, you know, working harder than your competitors, and with greater breadth to your vision. That is passion and commitment. And if you're lucky enough to love what you do, that's an amazing way to live. But the truth is, many don't love what they do. Many can't get jobs they love. But I would still say, if you apply yourself fully and give everything you can, you'll get far more back. If you think what they give me, it's like at home with your wife or your husband or your girlfriend or your boyfriend. If your attitude is what can they do for me or what they're not doing for me, you won't get happiness. If your attitude is I'm going to do the most for my partner, you'll get more happiness because that partner will be happier and they'll do more back for you.
And as we close, I want to ask you this. You know, there is a whole lot of life up north. I live in a really, really brilliant city, which was transformed by the bomb in 20, 30 years ago, however many years ago it was. And I have over the years instigated and organised some really brilliant charity events. So you know what's coming here? You know what's coming. I want you to chair a committee. You can choose the charity. And I want you to help me put something together that Manchester has never seen. Now, you've shot yourself in the foot because you've dropped a lot of names in the last hour. So we are going to get a minibus and we're going to do something up here. And it's not going to have a brand name and it's not going to have anyone's name. We can do it under the radar. But I think it would be a great tribute to a charity. You can think about it and let me know whether you're in or out.
That's why you're Liz Taylor.
Between you and I was a little bit intimidated about interviewing Jonathan Shallop because he was always up there with the big boys and I've always been climbing up three steps behind him. But what I really got from that interview was inspiration. He's inspiring, he's brutally honest, he's a man of integrity and he holds no prisoners. I think he's just my kind of guy. With all that in mind, that was why I chose, from his words, work harder and think broader as the title to my air extension, which is in your podcast feed now. If you're enjoying Events That Made Me, subscribe wherever you're listening and tell your friends about it. To find out more about how you and I can work together, look for at Liz Taylor Consultancy on my social media or go to my website. Little bit of a mouthful, but it's liz-taylor-consulting.co.uk. You can put your dancing shoes on for my next guest on the 10th of March. You will not want to miss this one.